cliffcentral.com. Good morning, everybody. It is Friday the 9th of September. End of the week. Unbelievable. I sound like Bert Leclos. I sounded like Bert Leclos there. I went, unbelievable. All right, well, I mean, the news that the whole world is talking about and that no one can ignore this morning, and I think for good reason, is the death yesterday of Queen Elizabeth II, who really has been witness to 70 years of unbelievable change on the planet. And I think did a singularly good job of stewarding us into a new century and of helping people who wanted to maintain some foothold on tradition and on the past, helping those people to deal with an uncertain future. And there are things about tradition which and history which make that kind of role especially important. And to people who don't understand that, because they perhaps don't have a care or appreciation for tradition and history, well, for those people, all of the things that you will see in the next few months as a result of this one woman's death will seem ridiculous and will seem outrageous and will seem unnecessary and archaic and silly. I have to tell you that there is a part of me that thinks monarchy is ridiculous. If you examine it on its face and with regard to, you know, how systems of government have improved over the years and how we've become better at managing realms and countries and sovereignties, then it does look silly. But there is something also, an equal part of me, which clings to tradition, has a respect for history, realizes that the answers that we think we are now so good at providing will look equally stupid to generations that come after us. And the only way that we will maintain any kind of dignity, if the future is to look back on us kindly and generously, is if we are equally respectful and equally generous to that which came before us. There is always a place in this world for people who honor tradition, people who create and maintain and carry culture forward. And the British monarchy is one of the few surviving institutions in the world, and there really are only a few of them, that can hearken back to 1,000 years or more of history and can claim and can lay claim to stories that are so intricate and interwoven that not even a Tolkien or a J.K. Rowling could write them. In fact, they are the basis so often of how we explore the past, how we try to contrive a future. And it is sad. I personally can't tell you that I'm emotionally devastated by the death of the Queen. I think that is something that perhaps her closest family can say with confidence and honesty and sincerity. But I still feel that we finally said goodbye to an extraordinary generation, a generation that guided us through an enormous and devastating and globe-changing history-writing war, the Second World War, and what the Queen and her parents managed to do for a nation which was at that stage still a world superpower was nothing short of heroic. And yes, a lot of people say, well, we're standing on a balcony and waving is not heroic. Well, you know what? The people who grew up around the Queen and the people of her generation would beg to differ. And I always say, just like I do to anyone who has, you know, modern ideas, don't look back and criticize people who came before you because you think that they're backward and archaic and silly. Unless you're absolutely sure that what you're doing isn't going to look archaic and stupid and silly when people in 100 years from now look at us. You know, it's sort of like when you walk into someone's house and everything's very modern. It can look very nice. It can be very stylish. It can be very en vogue. It can be very impressive. It can be up to date and and innovative and very clever and expensive even, that can be impressive to people. But if you walk into someone's house and you see a cabinet that has been in the possession of that family for 400 years, or you see a threadbare carpet that was once walked over by, you know, great statesmen of the 1700s, then I think there's a level of basic humility and respect that should kick in, unless you're the kind of person who really has no respect for any institutions. And we can see those people all over the world today. It's not hard to find them. They're usually terrific underachievers of their own, by their own measure, by the measure of everyone around them. And they're not the kind of people who have respect for anything, including themselves, usually. You know, I'm paying as little attention as I possibly can to the attention-seeking sort of people who will use the death of anybody to make it about them, and will try to gather for themselves as much of the spotlight as they possibly can in a moment of triumph or tragedy. And there are lots of those people on the internet these days. We have to see them more than we might have when they were just on the street hollering from a soapbox on the corner of two roads with a cup jingling and jangling some coins and hoping for some attention. And now we have to hear them and see them on the internet. So I'm not going to give them much more attention than in that sentence I just completed. But I do think that the death of the Queen is symbolic, and it is the end of an era, and a mighty tree has fallen. And that tree is not just a person, it is tradition, and it is history, and it is now the job of the succeeding generation to continue that. So we'll see what happens. But to pretend that this doesn't mean anything makes you a very, very silly, very vacuous, a very suspicious person. Anyway, I mean, I'd love to hear what you think of this. I'd like to talk about this rather than monologue about it for another 10 minutes. So if you have anything to say, you could drop us a comment. Also got some voice notes, and in fact, I'm going to start off with a voice note. Pretty much had my say about the Queen, but we can talk about that some more if you'd like to. Listen to this quickly.
Gareth, how's it? Greetings from South Sudan. Just want to let you guys know that I was listening to you, Gareth, and Lebang and Flax ranting about how we're going to char cockroaches in 2030. When it almost sunk a Land Cruiser in a sinkhole, not the cool roads there in South Sudan. But honestly, guys, you guys really make this shithole country a lot more bearable. And yeah, keep up the good work. Ben, if you're on today, you're flipping good oak. I really, really miss Wednesdays with you and Gord. Hashtag Decimal Dan. Like you guys, Francois.
Nice. Thank you, Francois. Yeah, Ben will be back a little bit later on from 6:30. Gord joining us at 7:00. So exciting things. Sean says, I hope Apple doesn't call the iPhone 14 the Queen Elizabeth edition. God, I'm seeing such funny memes about the new Apple iPhone. It's just, it's kind of ridiculous. They just changed the color, really. Some of the comments on the socials have been vile, really vile. Zero respect, not just the institution, but for a woman, a remarkable woman. Well, it shows you that all of the people who say those things actually don't care about women at all. Because here's a woman who, by an accident of birth, sure, achieved things and presided over things and oversaw and took part in every global event at the highest level for the last 70 years. And there'll be some left-wing feminist who'll say, oh no, she's just a, you know, dinosaur of an old colonial era, blah, blah, blah. They'll give her no credit for being a woman in a very much man's job. She's just disregarded as an inconvenient accident. Much like they'll regard, you know, all three British prime ministers who are female have been conservative, which just doesn't suit the people on the left. So they just pretend they're not there. You know, nobody took Margaret Thatcher seriously for the same reasons. Though I hasten to add, the Queen has never been political, which in today's day and age is probably the rarest and most precious and most valuable thing any human could be, is apolitical. And she's maintained that for 70 years on the job, we've never known what the Queen really thought politically. We've never had an inkling of how she might vote if she were allowed to vote. You know, talk about the franchise being universal. I mean, you can say many things, but you can't claim that the Queen ever got to cast a vote in an election, and she didn't. Certainly not while she was Queen. And we never knew anything about her opinions on things, something which is now garden variety on the internet. So, you know, I'm always sad when one hears of a family who lost their mother or grandmother, and this family will be scrutinized in their grief. That is so very hard. Well, it won't be the first time for them, and it won't be the last. But I think it's going to be interesting to see how people react to what happens now, because this hasn't happened for 70 years. And we're going to see sometime next year, probably in the summer next year, a coronation. I mean, if you think that the royal ceremonies and pageantry and pomp and circumstance of a jubilee is an impressive thing, and if you think that harkens back with carriages and marching soldiers and, you know, that sort of thing to an earlier era, well, you have no idea. The coronation ceremony, which we're going to see, is 1,000 years old. And some of the rituals there have not been changed since the time of Norman the Conqueror, since the time of King Charlemagne. You know, these are things which are truly ancient. And you know, like Chesterton once said, the great G.K. Chesterton, he suspects always as ignorant the man who breaks down a fence without asking first why it was put there. And this is true for things like monarchy. You know, you can say, as Churchill said, that democracy is the best of a bunch of terrible systems. And I paraphrase him there. But you cannot disregard the fact that Britain has been one of the most stable countries in the whole modern world for at least the last 200 years, since before the Industrial Revolution even. Because it has had this interesting mix of hereditary monarchy and constitutional democracy. You can criticize it, but show me a better system. And the US system is possibly, from the point of view of pure efficiency and checks and balances, the only one that you could regard as superior. And remember, when you quote countries like Canada or Australia or New Zealand or perhaps Jamaica, or any others, you have to remember that the Queen is also head of state of those. Well, now she isn't. King Charles III is. But, you know, to throw all of that out, to say, oh, well, it's stupid, then I have to ask who you think you are to say that that's stupid when your own CV can't really measure up. And I say that with confidence. Very few living human beings who have a CV that can measure up. indeed, a large tree has fallen. I work for a large company in the UK, so I'm hearing now how much people are affected, and we as South Africa need to show our respect. Well, you don't have to show your respect, but you can shut up if you don't want to be respectful. You know, I've never had a huge amount of respect for the dead, and I'm the first to admit that last night I was already sending, you know, sort of jokey things to family. I'm not going to put that stuff out on the show now. But in a few days, I'll probably start joking about it too. There are already people saying, oh, wow, she wasn't, you know, like the dinosaurs here forever. There are lots of funny things you could remark about the Queen here, and I'm happy to share those things. I think it's hilarious. I mean, we read out Sean's comment about the iPhone 14, the Queen Elizabeth edition. So I'm not precious about it. But I do think it's absolutely unbelievable how many people are just filled with the most ugly kind of malice. So we shall see. Congo Chris says, fun fact, Mandela was the only non-royal who referred to her by first name. That's partly true, but not entirely, because the Queen does, there are a few people who've been able to refer to her by first name. Some of them very close friends, even though they weren't necessarily royal. So there are a few, but certainly Nelson Mandela was one of a very, very small circle of people who was able to do that. And she was very fond of him. And I think, you know, for good reason. Here was a man who she could really be herself with. A man whose own achievements meant that he didn't have to defer and that he didn't have to bow and scrape, and also that he didn't have to feel superior. She knew probably more secrets than any other living person, and not one of them was ever revealed, even by mistake. How many of us could say that about ourselves when someone tells you something in confidence? You know, just a silly thing, like you find out that one of your friends is cheating, and you keep that a secret. Now imagine at the level of international politics, where there are secrets flying around about things to do with nuclear weapons, to do with wars, invasions, threats to national security, and she kept all of that secret. The only time that a prime minister could really open up was when they had their weekly audience of the Queen. And in that way, I think a lot of English historians have said that constitutional monarchy is quite superior because it allows some steam to be let off between the executive branch of government, in this case the prime minister, and the head of state, the Queen. Anyway, it's interesting. Here's Congo Chris, listen, while we're talking about his comment.
Good morning, good morning, good morning, good morning. It's me, the guest pest, the warning in the morning, the mayhem of 6 a.m., the undefeated, undisputed, and undeniable heavyweight champion of the comment section, your boy Congo Chris. And I just wanted to say, it's the weekend, baby!
Nice, and indeed it is. Okay, so, I'm very sad for Jesse Clegg, says Dearlinda Oliveira. Yes, Jesse Clegg, the mother of his child, I'm not sure if they were married or not, died also of cancer. Poor old Jesse, I mean, really has had a rough time of it. His father not so long ago, now his... the mother of his children, his long-time relationship, perhaps wife, I'm not sure what the details were. I didn't know them closely enough. But yes, I saw that yesterday too. So our sympathies there. Theron says, can't the monarchy be abolished with her death? I'm not hopeful about that, Charles. And then what? Liz Truss? I mean, is Britain to be represented by Liz Truss? Are we going to sweep everything that anyone in the world likes about Britain? Palace, the soldiers, the pageantry, the history, the extraordinary stories. Are we going to throw all of that in the rubbish bin and condemn it to museums and instead have to listen to Liz Truss or Boris Johnson? Is that what you'd prefer? I'm pretty sure that the people of Britain wouldn't. Anyway, I wonder. Nicely said, your laughter can lighten the mood, but a time for mourning is necessary. Well, if you feel that is necessary, there are going to be supposedly 12 days of mourning. The Queen will be buried on a date 10 days from now, according to what I've read, so that'll be Sunday next week. And she'll lie in state, and I mean, the crowds that already gathered outside Buckingham Palace last night was extraordinary. It was quite something to see. Such sad news, says Sharon. 2 weeks of mourning is a bit much, don't you guys think? Well, you see, some people think it's not enough. Some people think it's too much. I don't know. That's not for me to decide. She was a driver during World War II. She had to tolerate all types of people, and she did for the UK. Long live Boris Johnson, says Congo Chris. Well, yeah, I mean, it's interesting that at the moment that the Queen draws her last breath, Charles becomes king, which is what happened last night. Or yesterday afternoon. He's taken the regnal name of Charles III. He could have probably taken another name. He might have taken his grandfather's name and gone as George VII. But I think he's elected. Everyone knows him as Charles. It would be odd if he suddenly changed his name to George now. And, you know, his reign is unlikely to be even a tiny bit as long as his mother's. He's already 73 years old. So for Charles, he is kind of a space saver for the next generation. He's been the longest in-waiting heir apparent to the British throne in history. And everybody's worried about what kind of a person Charles is and what his political beliefs are and, you know, what kinds of things he has done in his life and personally what sort of character he has and all of that stuff. Because people are really stupid. They don't understand that the institution trumps the person in it. There have been awful, god-awful people who've occupied the throne of various countries over the years. And if the institution is greater than the person, which is very much the case in a place like Britain after 1,000 years of established tradition, it doesn't matter what the character of the person is. Not that I have a problem with King Charles III. I think he's exactly the right kind of person to be a king. He is just enough of a, you know, a genuflection to the past to be a curiosity, a historical curiosity. He's definitely a child of the 1940s and carries some of his parents' gravitas forward, although not nearly as much. But then obviously that, because he hasn't had the time that they have, you know, to do this in terms of being in the role of the king. And everybody seems to think that the rules are just made up on the spot, you know, like their own chaotic lives. This is what happens. People are like, oh, but is he going to abdicate? Doesn't it pass directly to William? You know, just because all of the rest of the world is in chaos and run by buffoons like Joe Biden doesn't mean that there isn't a script for this. Doesn't mean that over 1,000 years they haven't figured out the best way to smoothly transition from one thing to another. And that is precisely why so many people look to the monarchy as a source of comfort and inspiration, because they know what they're doing. They've been doing it for an exceedingly long time. And people who don't understand that and who live in constant turmoil and chaos, imagine that everything in the world is turmoil and chaos, and that everyone has absolute agency, or that they have none. And in a situation like this, the rules are written down. I wonder how Mrs. Narcissist Markle is going to turn it to be about herself. Oh yeah, you just wait. She's going to pitch up at some point with some terrible attention-seeking effort. You know, she's precisely the kind of person, actually, who would be saying horrible things on the internet if she weren't being held back by a tiny modicum of what remains of her sense of decency. And I don't think there's a lot, but it's enough to stop her from going online and saying terrible things about the Queen. Is it true that Prince Philip has not been buried yet? Yeah, that is true. He's in the Royal Vault at Windsor. He's on a slab under the St. George's Chapel nave, and he's waiting for the Queen to join him, and then they'll both be buried together in a separate royal vault that the Queen's parents are buried in, and Princess Margaret. Have a great weekend, everybody. Off to shoot some babies. Oh, nice. No, not what you think. A client's waters just broke. Oh, well, congratulations, you see. Birth and death. Well, I've got my mother's 70th, coincidentally, this weekend. It's ironic. She was born in the year that the Queen became Queen. And she's celebrating 70 years tomorrow. We're having a big party on an old family farm that's been there for 200 years. And we are going to be celebrating her, which I'm excited about. And lots of her friends coming. She's got, well, the ones that she could gather up who are still around and well enough. And some of the younger people, too, will be there. But it's quite something, and I know how lucky I am. I know how many people who are listening to this right now wish they still had their mom around or wish they still had their dad around. I'm lucky to have both. And I'm lucky that we can celebrate her this weekend. So we're going to be doing that on Saturday. So I've got a big weekend planned. But it is just about 6:30, and it's time for us to check in with Ben Karpinski, who is newly returned from Australia, where by all evidence that I've gathered on social media, he had the most terrific time. Hey, Ben.
Hey, Gareth. How's it going?
Good. God save the King and Queen Camilla, who I know you're excited about.
Yeah, you know, Camilla's worked really hard for this, yeah. So she finally gets her day. She's right. No doubt going to celebrate with 3 pints of Guinness and at least 2 ice creams down her chin.
Right, exactly. Good for her. So how was your trip? Yeah. Everybody wants to know.
Yeah, like I totally get it. Australia's amazing. It really is in so many different ways. I think Melbourne's probably the greatest city place I've ever been to.
Wow, really? So the best city you've ever been to, huh?
Look, I haven't traveled as much as... Sorry, I've not come back because I was on that absolute germ vehicle of an aeroplane for about 20 hours. I'm so run down still. Hello? And yeah, Melbourne, like, I'm a massive history nerd, as you know, and I love mm-hmm. sport. And what Melbourne does is it combines amazing history, architecture, and a functioning big city with the greatest sporting city in the whole world. And that's,
wow.
they've got the Aussie Open Tennis, they've got their own Grand Prix, they've got the Melbourne Cup, which is one of the biggest horse racing events in the whole world. Hmm. They've got some of the best golf courses. You really can go on. And what I got to experience first up was AFL, as in Aussie Rules Football.
Oh, yeah.
I went to the MCG, which is obviously one of the biggest cricket stadiums in the world, but it's also the cauldron of all AFL. 88,316 people
wow.
cheering for men in tight clothing throwing this ball around. Yeah, it was like, I often reference like Rick and Morty when I discover new things in life, because we all live what feels like in one plane
mm-hmm.
and then we go like another dimensions. Like, that's Australia. Australia is like, if South Africa was just kept working basically, and everything and money. To reinvest money into a country, you can have a pretty cool fucking country.
Yeah.
And that's what I feel they've got. And I know it's so sophisticated. I had no idea Australians were so sophisticated. But everything is just cool. It's not like, you know, you go to a first world country and go, oh, you know, everything just works. It's so cool. There, everything works and people are genuinely pretty happy. Like, yeah. they're living cool lives and they're just doing really cool things and they've got their own thing on the go. Like, you know, you go to Europe, there's a lot of cuntiness around people.
Yeah.
You go to Australia, it's like, they've got their own thing. They're happy. They're not smug about it. They just got cool stuff. And it was just endlessly entertaining. Every single day I was discovering new things. And I was there for a long time. And I was working, essentially. So I felt like, you know, I was doing like the train commutes. I would like have my favorite coffee place that I went to.
Nice.
So
you actually lived there for a bit. It wasn't just tourism.
It was my lived experience, Gareth. Oh, God, so therefore it counts a lot.
There we go.
Yeah, and I totally get it. You know, like I now support the football team. You know, I'm a diehard 3-week-old supporter.
Mm-hmm.
We just missed the playoffs, which was obviously very, very tough. but yeah, I literally cannot speak high enough of the place. Yeah, it's pretty special. And work wise, it was a tough 2 weeks.
You obviously had a lot.
It was a tough 2 weeks. Like, yeah, we're constantly pitching our business match kit. And it was so cool to never ever being close to the smartest person in any room I was there for like 2 weeks. You know, we live in a bubble here in South Africa in many ways.
Yeah.
And you know, in the whole venture capital startup space, shit, there is incredible things happening out there. And there's incredible money to support incredible ideas.
Yeah.
You know, you work quite hard in South Africa, not to sound defeatist, but there's a pretty obvious ceiling with a lot of things. I mean, there's obviously opportunity in lots of other areas.
Yes.
But there's also like, you have meetings. Halfway through the meeting, you know you're talking to a moron.
Hmm.
There is no money. There is no vision. And they are wanting to see what's in it for them. You have a meeting over there. These people have long-term visions. They have like really good staff components that are very smart and working together. And there is a genuine sort of greater good. Yeah,
I'm really happy. I'm happy to hear that. I mean, you know, we've often said rude and disparaging things about Australia, but we say rude and disparaging things about ourselves. So there is a counterbalance.
Of course.
And we say rude and disparaging things about every other country too. So, you know, it's not like we've created a special place here in this show where we, you know, especially go to the trouble of making nice things happen and saying only the most beautiful things we can about Iran, for example. You know, we're an equal opportunity offender. But I like the fact that there's a bit of experience here from you, someone who I think we trust to give us an honest bit of feedback. So that's great.
Yeah, I mean, look, I could go on for hours. It was such an eye-opening trip. And of course, having not traveled, like the last time I traveled overseas was to go see High Rob in Netherlands. So you really do get into a rut when you don't travel. Even though, like, I'm a pretty happy guy, I try and make the most every day. When you aren't traveling, when you aren't testing yourself, you really do become quite average. You know, and again, like, I'm my harshest critic with everything. But when you have to get out of your comfort zone to that extent and realize how humbling it is at the age of 40, and you think, like, fuck, what have I actually been doing with my life? If this is what's possible and this is what's out there. Like, you just look around. I just feel like everyone's rich there. Everyone's got time and they've got like stuff to do. I mean, everyone's got problems. I get that. But it's not a pressure-filled society, you know. Yeah. They all got their own thing on the go, but they've also got so many options and they're so chilled about stuff. And like my good friend Dennis, who I've always kind of known through podcasting and obviously through social media, like I finally met him as a person. And I mean, the guy's just so interesting. Like he works in renewables. He's quite a big deal in that. But at the same time, he's more of a sports person and sports authority than I would ever be. And that's what I dedicated most of my years to in my 20s and 30s. Like he's just living such a great life and he's just got so many cool things. He's got great stories and yeah, I mean like just meeting people and like, yeah, it's, I don't want to like paint it like Australia is perfect because I was in Melbourne. If you were to go to Darwin or, you know, other places, it is quite backward and it's quite rough. I went to Brisbane after Melbourne and Brisbane's a little bit different. It's quite new and shiny. It doesn't quite have the soul. But it's also like a really cool, prosperous big city. You know, they've got the Brisbane River and it's very beautiful. And they've got the Olympics there in 2032. So they've got this huge 10-year growth spurt that's happening right now. And there's just skyscrapers everywhere. It's like, again, it's just like the scale. Like you think you live in a place that's got a little bit of money. And then you realize what's really going on out there.
Yeah,
it's absolutely incredible.
Well, I'm happy to have your firsthand experience here on this because it gives us a little bit more perspective. And context.
And also, Gareth, like, you know, in life, you always want to live with abundance. You never want a scarcity mindset because that's what ultimately puts you in a rut and it makes you quite average. The amount of, I'm not saying like Hinge is a snapshot of life, but it's definitely like a portal to what's out there. Fuck, I mean, living here in South Africa and you're on Hinge, you probably swipe across like 30 girls and you might like one of them. Okay, maybe personal preference. I'm a bit weird. I don't know.
Sure.
In Australia, like 7, 8 out of 10, totally.
Really?
You interact with them. There are so many girls there. Like, and again, maybe I just wish that maybe I'd gone there when I was like 30, because now I'm, as I said, I'm 40. So many girls. If you go out, like the ratio of girls to guys is just, it's crazy.
Nice.
It's actually like, it's ridiculous.
That's the place. I mean, it's not too late for you to find an Australian wife.
No, it's not. It's not. But the weird thing is like you start thinking about that kind of stuff. Like, you know, what if I've lived here for 10 years? Maybe I would have wanted kids. You know, you start changing your life because you see what's possible out there. Like, it's a very different world. But like Aussie guys are so aloof because they've just got so many options. Like so many options. In Joburg, there's probably like 2 or 3 girls that people know of who are attractive there. I was staying in South Yarra, just off Chapel Street, and it's probably like 3 kilometers of the coolest bars, restaurants, nightclubs, things to do. And in Melbourne, as you can tell by MasterChef, like you cannot open a cuck restaurant. I'm pretty sure there's actually a commission in Melbourne.
No, it's famous.
Like the anti-cuck.
It's famous for that. I mean, the restaurants of Melbourne are world famous.
They are so amazing that a really good friend of mine was actually there coincidentally on business and we wanted to go for dinner on Monday. Like it's a Monday, right?
Right.
And it's the middle of winter. The weather was shit there. It was like Cape Town on a bad day. It was so cold. It was always drizzly and shitty. So I saw it at its worst and it was still great. So Monday, shitty weather. I phoned like a few places and the standard response was, we haven't got a table for you, but maybe we can fit you in at 9 o'clock.
Sure.
And like, 9 o'clock on a Monday, and that's where they might fit you in. There are so many incredible restaurants, and the whole culture is always just being out and going to places because, you know, people have money. But like the finest restaurants, the coolest bars, and because they use the city, there's like these really cool places down alleyways. And then where I was in South Yarra, this road is like, if you imagine like Parker's, like 4th Avenue, which is like the Joburg. Okay. On a good day, that's what, like 300 meters of things to go see and do. But even then, it's like broken up by like weird interior stores or shitty shops. Chapel Street is basically bars, restaurants, amazing places where you can go and have dates or meet friends for like 3 kilometers. I think it's about 3 kilometers, maybe 2.
Wow.
But it's and everything's high quality. You cannot open a cuck restaurant there. I'm pretty sure you get shamed. They pull you out at the middle of the night. They burn your place. Everything's amazing.
All right, I like it. Let's turn our attention to some other things because I don't want to take up the entire morning with just Australia. So what else is going on that's piqued your interest over the while? You've been on social media. Have you seen what's been happening? Anything that you thought, wow, this is a cool thing?
Look, I really want to get away from Australia, but another great thing about being there is like I wasn't really on social media much.
Okay.
I was purely focusing on learning about Australia, Australian sports and all that kind of stuff. And it was very liberating in that I felt like a lot smarter. I wasn't going through the usual social media shits. It was such a weird experience again, because you're somewhere completely different doing different things. And your mind is growing in different ways. You know, when you start focusing on different things, it's amazing how positive you could be as well.
Right. Well, I mean, that's good to hear too, because that's kind of what your mission at the moment is, to kind of, it's self-improvement, right? It's one of the things that you're most interested in.
Yeah.
I think that's excellent.
But just on that, I realized as well, like, you know, when you try to do all these things that make you better and younger and stronger, you take them away. Like, I didn't sleep for like 2 weeks. Like, you have terrible jet lag on the way there. And then we got this. So I went there with one of my business partners. So I gave her the nice room of the apartment. But the second room of the apartment was particularly shit.
Yeah.
It was like a half room with a single bed. And the single bed had wheels. So I would probably go to bed. I would try to go to bed at like 9, 10. I would wake up every morning at like 1 a.m. and I couldn't get back to sleep for like 10 days. I was just wide awake, and then you're just like a zombie through the whole time. So by the time you rack up the days of not sleeping, not exercising, not eating well, shit, like I look so different. I'm so lethargic now. I mean, look at me. I look about 5 years fucking older.
I don't know. You're getting a lot of compliments from people here. Someone says you're glowing. Thurin says you're glowing. I think Ben found love down under. Well, I mean, would you move there? That's the question. If you were given an all expenses paid ability to just move to Australia tomorrow, would you do it? Is the value of what you've seen so great that you would be happy to abandon all the things you've done here and the connections you've made in this place?
Yeah. This is the annoying thing about being South African and traveling, is that the first thing you always think about is like, can I live here?
Yeah.
I could live in Melbourne. I could definitely live in Melbourne. It's a very simple answer. It's a place where, like, for this business that we're creating, it's the future. I mean, we can maybe push some paper around here, but if you want to make a big impact, we've got to have an office there. So maybe I can do half-half. I don't know if I could ever leave this place. And I know maybe it's a Stockholm syndrome thing, but you know, you do. And this is again like this. It's a really strange thing to try to describe, because on paper you think, well, why the fuck would you want to live in the third world where you wake up like today with no power? But there's something about connections and roots and things that you create. Like, as much as I say I'm reclusive and I am quite socially aloof, like, I would miss you hugely. I would miss certain people that I have day to day interactions with. I'd obviously miss my cats. I was no ways I could make them travel that far. I mean, that plane trip almost broke me. It'll totally kill them. So, yeah.
It is bloody far. I mean, it's really a long way to go.
Fuck. So on the way back, I was meant to fly from Brisbane to Perth to Singapore to Johannesburg.
Mm-hmm.
I had quite a big last night. I kind of went out with a bit of a bang in Brisbane. And maybe I was just a bit slow in the head in the morning, but I missed my flight. I won't go into the intricacies of how slow the Brisbane train is, but I missed my flight, and I spent 3 hours in a call center with Indian men who weren't understanding me. And then eventually, it was just the longest day. And then I eventually somehow got put onto an even better flight, and I eventually made it. But you travel for like, it was like 30 hours altogether. Oh man, it breaks you. Like, I was so broken on Sunday night into Monday, still recovering. But yeah, Gareth, I think it's one of those things that I don't want to make sweeping decisions and just think you have to have one or the other. I've got a great base here. I've got a great life here. I've got a good business. I can have a better everything in Australia.
Yeah.
But you know, it's I'm not 30 anymore. I know that's not an excuse, but there's also certain things that you look at life a little differently now. So I do want to open an office in Australia, absolutely no doubt about that. How much time I would spend there, I need to work out with my partners. And obviously we need to make money because Australia's fucking expensive. I'm not going there with the rent.
No.
Shit, you won't go very far.
You'll be in big trouble. All right.
No, well, I need to make money.
Well, that's very interesting. We've got Gord coming in a little bit later on. So he's got lots of stories from Europe. So this morning is like a travel edition, I reckon. Congo Chris says, take me with Ben. We will father an entire generation of Melbournians between us.
Well, Congo Chris, they don't need it, hey? They've got good enough people there. As much as we are amazing and our offspring would be delightful, they've got more than enough.
Michael says, I've been in Switzerland for 10 years now and still have Stockholm syndrome for South Africa. Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's good to hear this point of view, and especially from someone whose opinion I can actually value. Because there are a lot of people who talk a lot of smack about things, and a lot of very stupid people have told me what they think of, you know, Australia. And a lot of smart people who I didn't really know that well told me a very different story. And now I have to put this into the mix when I think about it. But good. Good.
Well, look, I mean, it's like speaking about putting things in the mix, this is my one thing about Australia which makes me nervous, is that they are incredibly woke, as in they are institutionally woke. I get it, because in order for a society like theirs to have function, they've got this greater good thing, and they all stand together and do stuff. But that, as we saw during COVID, can backfire into an absolute disaster. You make one decision, everyone's on board. If it's a bad decision, well, you're all fucked for a while.
Right.
Whereas here, things are thought about, and there's different ways of thinking, and there's different ways of actions. Whereas there, it's like, it's almost like it's a blessing and a curse at the same time. You know, when you get a system that works together, loads of amazing things happen. Probably more amazing than bad. But that wokeness is just such a cancer in my mind. Like, again, going back to Hinge, 99% of the girls there had pronouns. And I just cannot take that seriously. People are very into that kind of stuff there. They're very into being overly inclusive. And I'm all for, but, you know, inclusivity is a very important thing. But it's like it's really, really hypercharged there. And the reason I say I have a problem with that is because here in South Africa, I think we're further down the line. You know, we've taken wokeness to another level. We've been inclusive, and there's also been pitfalls to that inclusivity. And people always think that there is never going to be a pitfall or a downside to inclusivity, but there really is. Sometimes you take your eye off what the main goals are in life.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, again, like as a white middle-aged man, you can't have this conversation with people because they want to shut you down because they think you're wrong. But we've seen in this country how it can be taken to a level where nobody wins. Absolutely nobody wins. And we all know going woke makes you go broke. So that would be my only issue. And when you're over there, you don't have the ability to be like, you know, Cliff Central Friday morning. No. Let's have a chat.
Hell no. But you don't even really have that here in some ways. I mean, you have to determine that that's your place and you're going to do what you want anyway. Take the risks. Which is the same for Australia. I mean, there are Australians, Australian broadcasters who I listen to who are more kind of right wing than anything we've got in South Africa, and they're very popular and they do a good job. But in cities like Melbourne, hope in hell, like it's totally, totally woke. It's like Vancouver in Canada, or you know, Seattle in Washington State.
And that's the thing: if you want the nice restaurants and bars and places where the girl to guy ratio is really high,
you got to go to work places. You have to.
You're going to have to play by a little different song sheet, unfortunately. Yeah.
Those
not that I'm a big and I can't adapt. It's just that that kind of stuff is tiring for me because it's not sincere. And I know this for a fact. Like, people do this because they want to be popular. Businesses do this because they want to do the right thing. Right. They don't have any deep set ideology or principles around this. And I can see through that. And we've seen through that for years. So that's my big issue here. My issue isn't the inclusivity kind of angle. It's the lack of sincerity, and I'm just really big on sincerity, that's all.
Right. Okay, I'm happy about that. That's some excellent feedback. I don't know if you've been paying any attention to this at all, but you know, Meghan Markle hasn't been getting any headlines while the Queen's been lying dying, so she's very upset about that. But apparently Prince Harry Prince Harry arrived last night long after the Queen had died and was like, "Oh, sorry, did I miss something?" You know,
So apparently Megan's got a podcast. I got a message on Instagram earlier.
Yeah, we talked about this on Wednesday because Ryan and who else was it? Ryan listened to it. And I think somebody else on the show with us was listening to it. Oh, yes, it was Candace Mama. They listened to it and they said it's the most unbelievably shit thing they've ever heard in their life.
Which is what I was going to think it would be.
Yeah, it's just like me the whole time. And I always, you know, I try to think about these things with a bird's eye view because I do really dislike Meghan Markle and Prince Harry. But when I look at things from a little bit further away and I think, well, that doesn't matter because in 100 years' time, no one's going to really think about their personalities. It's going to be, you know, whether or not they changed the world in a positive or negative direction. And maybe Meghan Markle isn't so offensive to me because she's an offensive, horrible person, but maybe because she's representative of a certain kind of person that is, I hate to say it, but it may be true, in the majority in the world today, the kind of person who's totally interested in themselves all the time. There's no sense of doing anything for anyone else. There's no sense of being, you know, concerned for the greater good, duty, commitment, integrity. None of those things are important to people like Meghan Markle. And again, I'm not saying just her. She represents a bunch of things about kind of modern people in first world countries, especially, and the way they think about the world. And maybe that's why I get so... I get rubbed up the wrong way by people like her and Prince Harry. I don't know what it is. There's a lot of that. You know, there was someone posted a thing of Meghan Markle and Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez and some other people who are like, you know, they're like celebrities mixed with politicians, mixed with actors, actresses. You know, it's this very cheap version of kind of what people look up to these days. And I find it really off-putting, but a lot of people don't because they see themselves in it.
Yeah, but it goes back to what I'm saying. There's a lack of sincerity with those people, right? Yeah. I wouldn't trust either of those people, even if they told me that the sun is shining today. Those people aren't to be trusted. And I think that's what also gets you, and it gets me, because you look at them, you don't think they're adding anything to society. It's like... they're portraying what they feel is what society should be. And it's not sincere. People are going to forget about them very quickly because they never really had much of an impact. It's like Beyonce's songs.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've been saying that for, 15 years now, and she's still here, and she's still putting out music. I mean, she's got a team of, I don't know, 35 people who sit around in a circle and try to write a song for her, and usually the lyrics are just a repetition of one line. But it works. Because maybe the audience is dumb enough to just eat it up, you know?
Well, of course it is. Of course it is. People still queue for cronuts and, you know, taking pictures of bagels and stuff. There is the thing of supply and demand, and people do demand very average things because they lead very average lives.
But then do you think the fault might be with us? Because we're looking for something... We're looking to see other people reflect the things that we think are valuable, but actually the world... loves a Beyonce song and they think Meghan Markle's a perfect princess. You know, maybe that's what they like.
No, I just think that when given the attention, these things stick around. You know, why do you think that the crazy loony fucking batshit crazy left are still around? It's because people keep talking about them. Like, oh, do you see what this person said? Or can you believe that they want to do this? If no one gave a shit about them, same as the EFF, if no one gave a shit about them, and these stupid news networks weren't always like reporting what they say, they wouldn't be around. People would move on.
I don't know.
If you fan the flame, the flame shall burn.
But it's also supply and demand, right? I mean, there never used to be much demand for the kind of self-serving bullshit that we see in, you know, so many people who are in the media, and even in sport, Ben. I mean, you know this. You know, I saw this Kyrgios guy smashing his racket to pieces, two rackets that he absolutely destroyed on the court yesterday. It was all over the news. And I thought, you know, John McEnroe got into trouble for a lot less back in the 80s, and he was regarded as like the devil when he walked onto the tennis court. And And yet, I mean, if you've ever listened to an interview with John McEnroe, and I've heard him talk a couple of times, he's actually a tremendously placid, like, hippie. And he always has been. He's he's a really nice guy, the kind of guy who you think you'd get along with immediately. And I don't know whether – maybe I'm just getting old, and that's also some realization, you know. As you get older, you kind of – you tend to be less impressed with, like, people who have tantrums and perform. And you're more impressed with people who can actually contain themselves, bite their lip, and do the right thing, regardless of how they feel. When you're young, someone's emotions on full display immediately captivates you because you think, oh, that's so great. They're able to just be themselves, express themselves. You love the fact that someone has just raw emotion, right? It's why, you know, it's why girls like to watch romance movies. It's why guys like to watch action movies. It's like... we love revenge movies, all of us, because it draws on that emotion. It's why we also like to fall in and out of love, and we think it's the most important thing we've ever done. It's like we get really angry when we see someone say something that we don't appreciate or agree with or enjoy. And then later on in life, you don't respect that stuff at all. You go to completely the opposite side, and you're like, the person who can actually maintain their composure instead of become emotional is the person that you should look up to. That's a weird contradiction in terms that I'm still dealing with.
It is a bit, but you become critical through experience because the things that you found were amazing, you tire of them because you see a better way. And like when people say, oh, you're such an old man, I take that as a compliment. It means that I've evolved from being so base in how I look at things and how I react to things. Like this is all those cliches coming back to kind of make sense, Gareth. Is that, you know, you do become more critical as you get older because you just know more.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's almost as if the whole story of humanity is written into each of our lives, right? Now I'm getting very philosophical, but if you took early man, you know, early man would just, like, if his wife pissed him off, he'd just hit her in the face or, you know, knock her out, punch her lights out. Early man would just, if he wanted to have sex, would just rape. Early man, if he wanted to eat, would just, you know, club something on the head and then just start gnawing on its raw flesh. Early man was just a pure instinct and emotion creature. And modern man is supposed to be highly intellectual, very sophisticated, tool-making, innovative, thinking more of the future than the past or the present. And that's maybe what happens in our own lives, is we slowly go from being early man, you know, when we're kids, it's uncontroversial to say that kids are just driven by instinct and emotion. That's clear to anyone who's ever seen a kid. And then you learn to become civilized. And I just look around the world today and I see a lot of people who are actually not particularly civilized. Like they really, and you could see it in the way they behave on social media because this wasn't available. So just as we can use social media for good, you can also use it to really very quickly judge whether someone is the kind of person who you deserve or should deserve your time and effort, whether you should spend any time and effort on them, because they reveal themselves immediately, right? It's instantaneous. So if you read someone's tweet or you see someone's Instagram post and it's just them taking a picture of their own ass or whatever, you kind of know what you're dealing with. And in that way, it's helped us to cut and separate the wheat from the chaff very, very quickly. So again, without sounding like a grumpy old man, like, I actually think social media is terrific because dumb, emotional, instinctive people will reveal themselves to their detriment on social media. And the people who actually hold back and probably don't say anything at all, which for someone like me is very difficult to do because I've, you know, my job is to say what I think. And those people who do that and who get it right in ways that I never could, those are the most respectable people imaginable. And I see it with the Queen. You know, she died yesterday, and now you see all these people coming out of the woodwork saying, oh, you know, she was terrific, she led for 70 years, she was a stable tent peg institutional capital, this value as a mainstay of society, of politics, of all kinds of things. And then you get other people who just say, oh, well, you know, oh, Lizzie's dead. Well, fuck. Or worse, and there's lots worse on the internet as well. By the way, I see the top trending topic in South Africa is Satan at the moment. You want to guess why?
I know.
Hazard a guess why Satan might be the top trending topic in South Africa. Talk about base and instinctive and emotional.
Because load shedding's back?
No, that would be a good reason. I think we'd all be calling on Satan if it was just load shedding. No, it's the Queen. It seems Black Twitter, which has always been a repository of great value, is dancing a jig about how excited they are that the Queen will be joining Satan in hell. So that's their opinion of the Queen, which is cool.
Okay.
You know, I mean, it's hilarious. You just do yourself a favor. If you feel like a laugh today, then go on and see that. It's really, it's kind of fun. I mean, I've long ago stopped expecting anything from Black Twitter except the exact opposite of what is useful and interesting and thoughtful. And therefore, I now look at it as a source of entertainment. Like I was just saying just now, people reveal themselves. And it's not just Black Twitter, but it's all over the world. You know, you've got people in America and everywhere else who are, they really are just like filled with ugliness. Ugliness. And if it wasn't the Queen, it would be something else. They'd be angry with someone this morning, no matter what had happened in the news. You know, it could be politics, it could be money, it could be health, it could be relationships. There's always going to be something for those people to be angry about. They can't wait in the morning to wake up and be cross, which is crazy. I mean, I'm genuinely excited about this weekend. I was saying my mom is celebrating 70 years this weekend, which is cool.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Very nice.
That's 70 years is a long time, huh?
Yeah, I know. Because in this year of 2022, both my parents turned 70 as well. We're doing like a big thing in November nice. For both of them.
Yeah, there we go.
Very nice.
Okay. David says, do you remember the power bracelet? That made it easy to spot cretins. I remember that.
Oh, those were amazing.
That was great, huh? All right. Well, it is.
That was a model.
It is 7 o'clock. We're going to get back with Gord Laws for the first time in ages in just a short while. Stick around for that and a whole lot more. CliffCentral.com, Friday morning. CliffCentral.com.